Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
All week long for the ship to arrive. Well, it's here. The Ship with Darren Smith, here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You saw fun and games till we get into the ring, and then you find out who's softer than Aquafina. If you can't stand the heat, stay away from my arena, cause all I bring is heat. You can call me Jalapeno, keep my name out your mouth unless you're trying to sing. I can lays that you get from seeing a champion. Belt, trophy, or ring, if you gotta show your bling, then tune in to the Ship where we talk about it, man. But if you tune in, you better know it's showtime. And every time he speak, man, he gonna speak his mind. Keeping the straight facts while others, they just assume. We're keeping it 100 while faking there's no room. With the loudest interviews and the hottest guests, you done dealt with the rest, now roll with the best. But before I forget, let me get back to the script. Introduce you to the host of the Ship, Darren Smith.
Good morning and welcome to the Ship with Darren Smith here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you all for tuning in. If you're listening to us on the radio dial or 810WHB.com or the app, we appreciate it very much. Happy Father's Day to all the men out there who are fathers, along with happy Juneteenth Day. Celebrating that. My guy Joe Biden did something good last year, gave us an extra federal holiday. So even though we don't celebrate it at the station because it is on a Sunday, I want you to celebrate it well this evening after the show. Got a lot to unpack in today's show. Going to talk in just a few moments. Our good friend Nate Bucati, who was co-host of the Border Patrol, will talk about Kansas City becoming a host city for the 2026 FIFA World Cup, as well as Sporting Kansas City's preview of their game later on today against Nashville. But we'll also be talking with Mark Collins, talk some Chiefs, talk some Deshaun Watson, as well as Michael Coleman a little bit later on in the hour. Of course, you know we've got to talk some NBA Finals and all the fallout from that. But as I mentioned before, we do have Nate Bucati on the line. Brother Nate, good morning to you and happy Father's Day to you.
Hey, happy Father's Day, Darren. Happy Juneteenth, man.
Oh, man, thank you so very much. Look, man, I know that you are in Nashville. I know you're going to call a good game, as always. So, but before we talk about that game, look, this week Kansas City was officially named the FIFA World Cup 2026 host city on Thursday, and it was announced along with 15 other cities across the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. I saw you live. I was at home. I don't do heat, so I couldn't be out there. But I saw you and Marzo out there, you know, getting the crowd revved up. And obviously, with the announcement that was made on the scoreboard behind you, we saw the celebration. I know we talked a few weeks ago about just the national game that was taking place in Kansas City, but can you put into words and give the audience an understanding of just how big it is for Kansas City to be named a host city to be able to host some games during the 2026 FIFA World Cup?
Yeah, I don't think I can properly put it into words, but I'll do my best, because it was actually one of the things I was talking about with some of the people that were really instrumental in really putting this bid together and making this event happen. We got together and celebrated the night of the announcement, and we were talking about how, you know, a huge percentage of the city really has no idea how significant this moment is. And then somebody said, you know, the truth is that none of us really do. Even those of us that are big soccer fans, that know how big the World Cup is and know, what the economic impact studies say and all of that, we still don't really know what it's going to do to this city, what it's going to be like for this city when the World Cup comes in 4 years. But, you know, the best thing I can tell you is I believe it's going to transform the sports landscape in Kansas City in ways that we haven't seen in a long time. Soccer is a growing sport in Kansas City, right? It's a popular sport, but it's still, you know, significantly below things like the Kansas City Chiefs and the Kansas City Royals and maybe even, you know, Kansas, Missouri, and Kansas State when it comes to the consciousness of the general public in Kansas City. But when you think about where soccer is in this country now, Darren, to where it was in 1994 when the World Cup came to the United States, it's night and day. I mean, it's not even close. There was no real major professional soccer playing opportunities in the United States for people that grew up playing soccer. And now you've got a league that's going to grow to 30 teams here very soon that pays good money. You know, players can make a very, very good living playing in Major League Soccer, let alone all the other leagues that are readily available on television in the United States now. And now you talk about the World Cup coming back to the United States, and not only in the United States, but in our hometown, and the chance of having somewhere between, I believe, 4 and 6 games, which is the equivalent from, you know, the type of people that we'll have in town, the media coverage and all that. It's like, imagine having 4 to 6 Super Bowls in your town in the span of a couple of weeks. That's what we're talking about. And when people roll their eyes at that, I understand that we think of the Super Bowl as by far the biggest television event in sports. And in this country, it is. But when you look at the viewership of the World Cup worldwide compared to the Super Bowl, the World Cup absolutely dwarfs the Super Bowl when it comes to that. So we're going to have our hometown on display for the whole world to see.
You know, and I wanted to follow up on that because you kind of lead me in that direction. Kansas City hosted World Cup games back in 1994, am I correct? Because I think we had that conversation because with that.
They did not.
No, they didn't. Okay, it was just in the United States, though. So, but with that being the case of Kansas City hosting it, I don't know why I thought I read where Kansas City had some type of involvement in the World Cup back then. But be that as it may, because the World Cup being held in the U.S. in '94 came the birth, as you mentioned, a couple of years later with MLS. Where do you see or how do you see? Because of obviously time, social consciousness, television contracts, and the growth of sports in general, how do you see the impact, or where do you see the impact going with the World Cup coming to the United States in North America in 2026? To where now, as you mentioned, you'll have an equivalent of 4 to 6 Super Bowl, within the Kansas City and other cities. Around the country, what will that do, and how do you see MLS or the sport of soccer springboarding for what's going to take place in 2026?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a league that has already been showing growth, excuse me, over the last 10 years, and it's just going to kick that growth into overdrive. And I think one of the biggest keys, Darren, is going to be the performance of the United States men's national team. And that's an interesting thing because the United States, in my opinion, is more dependent on their national team in terms to the relative popularity of that sport than any other country is. For example, like you take Italy. Italy is a massive, soccer country. They love their soccer, and like in most countries in the world, that's the sport they care the most about. And they've won the World Cup. They're a powerhouse. They didn't make this. They didn't qualify for this World Cup, and this is the second time they've missed it. The popularity of soccer in Italy will not be damaged at all by that. Everybody in Italy is still a soccer fan. It's still their favorite sport. They're going to watch their teams play, right? But in the United States, I think that the average American looks at a sport, and if our country is not good at it, then it's not a real sport. You know, if we're not dominant at it, then it must be a flawed sport, or it must not be a good sport or a real sport. And so I think for the average American, if they see the United States, that's why I think that, like, for example, the women's national team is so popular. They go out and they win, right?
Yeah.
So we're on board. And I think that in America, when the national team, if they play well in the United States with the whole world here watching, then you're going to see a whole generation of kids whose heroes are soccer players, American soccer players. And I'll use, for example, you know, our friend Ali Trost, that used to work at 810 and works for Sporting Kansas City now. every girl I talk to that's her age that's a big soccer fan will tell you, Mia Hamm was my hero when I was a kid.
I remember Mia well when I worked at the White House. Yeah.
And Allie Trost had a Mia Hamm jersey, and she got to meet her once as a kid, and it was the greatest day of her life, and that formed what she wanted to do growing up. And I think those are the types of things that really change how people view a sport. And I'm really optimistic that our national team is already pretty good, and I think in 4 years they're going to be even better, which will help a lot.
We're joined by Nate Bucati, who is co-host of the Border Patrol. You can tune in and listen to he and Stephen St. John Monday through Friday right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. Nate, obviously Kansas City, along with Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Guadalajara, Houston, L.A., Mexico City, Miami, Monterey, New York, New Jersey, Philly, San Francisco, Seattle, Toronto, and Vancouver, all named host cities. Kansas City, obviously, is the smallest of the cities that were named. I know there were some shots fired from, you know, Denver and a few others. What do you think, the decision-making was in Kansas City over some of the other cities that might have got passed over or that did get passed over?
Well, the conversation I had with people that worked actively on the bid process told me that, you know, comparing notes to people from these other cities and what they did for their bids, it wasn't even close. Kansas City absolutely knocked it out of the park, and these other cities, they just quite frankly didn't do as good of a job when it came to putting their bids together. And I think there's a lot of reasons behind that. And the first and foremost is that we have a tremendous amount of civic pride in Kansas City. All you have to do is walk around town and see everybody wearing their shirts that have KC logos of some kind on them. You know, you don't see that in every city. And the people that were in charge of this bid, the big money people in this town, like Cliff Illig, cared deeply about getting this done. So they tried at every turn to prove to FIFA that Kansas City was a worthy city. And some of these other cities, like Denver, I don't think it was as big of a priority for them. I don't think they worked as hard at it. And part of that's probably because they think, well, shoot, we're Denver. Look at us.
Right.
Mountains here. We got, you know, we got more people here. Surely they're going to pick us. I think actually the reaction from some of the people from Denver, they can't believe that Kansas City got picked over them, is a perfect example of why they got passed over by Kansas City. Because I think they took some of those things for granted, and they didn't do as good of a job. And I think for FIFA, they looked at it and realized that Kansas City has all the facilities for soccer that you could possibly need. They have an incredible passion for putting on a good event and putting their best foot forward, and they genuinely wanted the World Cup to be there, so they had proven that they were ready to take care of every issue that FIFA could possibly have, because it's going to be a big-time logistical exercise, right? To be able to handle this many people coming to our little city, getting them to the game safely and all those things. And I think that the bid committee did an incredible job of proving to them, yeah, we're up for it, and we're going to be able to handle it. And that's why they chose Kansas City.
You know, and one of the things that I like about it is that when they started the bid, they never really stopped. I mean, you would see Mahomes and Salvi and players, coaches, everybody talk about it over, you know, ever since they started the bid. I think back in 2017, 2018, when they first announced the bid, they were going to try to be a host city. That they never really ever stopped. I mean, you didn't really hear about it. Like, you know, when I would travel, of course, you travel covering sport in Kansas City, but when I would travel covering the NFL, you know, I never really felt that going into some of these other cities, you know, like, hey, we're trying to – now, a city like L.A., Dallas, New York, you probably, you know, pretty much assume that you're going to get just because of the sheer size, and Atlanta to an extent because you already got the facilities, obviously hosting the Olympics and stuff like that, so you've got the infrastructure there. But, you know, some of these other cities, like you said, like Denver, when I traveled to Denver over the last 2-3 seasons, I never really felt, as you talked about, you know, a city that was really trying to look like they were going for it. I mean, hell, you see it on the side of buildings, you see it on the streetcar here in Kansas City. I mean, you see commercials and you see, you know, players Andy Reid and folks just talking about it at the podium and stuff about, you know, we want the World Cup and, you know, the mayor year in and year, you know, day in and day out. So, yeah, to your point, yeah, it was something that you could see Kansas City really going after. But I know Blake wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I was just, Nate, you know, on top of the civic pride, on top of, you know, the athletes here in Kansas City and really the city kind of making this constant bid and constant push for it. Also, how much do you think it comes into play that Kansas City is dubbed the soccer capital of America? I mean, how much does that have to come into play as well?
Well, I think it all I think it all ties into what we're talking about, right? Because how did Kansas City become the soccer capital of America? Well, we kind of named ourselves that. You know, right. Like I don't know how many other people outside of Kansas City really buy into that. You know what I mean? Like sometimes I'll hear people from other cities say, why are you guys the soccer capital? What makes you say that? You know,
and well, hey, according to Google, that I'd say who's the soccer capital of the U.S.? It's Kansas City.
Well, there you go, right there. Sometimes there's a little bit, Blake, of a self-fulfilling prophecy to those things.
Yeah.
All right, because how did Kansas City become the soccer capital of America when Major League Soccer thought that it was not viable as a soccer market back when Lamar Hunt put the team up for sale and they were playing at Arrowhead Stadium with nobody there, and this ownership group bought the team. The Major League Soccer wanted them to move it to Rochester, New York, or somewhere like that, and they said, no, we're going to make it work here in Kansas City. And they went on to build, at the time, by far, the best soccer-specific stadium in the country. And then after they built that, they went out and they built the best training facility in the country, you know, and I think there, and the only reason is because, again, of the civic pride of the people that are involved with soccer in Kansas City, the owners that have the money that want Kansas City to be a world-class city with the best facilities and that sets the trend for the country. And that's what, you know, Cliff Illig, I put at the center of all that, and he's the one that's always told me, hey, look, we punch above our weight in Kansas City. We do things that are bigger and better than people from the coast think we can do, because that's who we are. And that's why, you know, yeah, Kansas City, soccer capital of America. Nobody else was going to call us that. Nobody else believed we could even be a regular soccer market. We just did it ourselves and told everybody, hey, look what we did. And that's what we do in Kansas City, right? Like, nobody, you know, touts KC more than people from KC. And this is an example of it in the world of soccer.
Well, hell, one thing, I guess Kansas City may as well start calling themselves home of the AFC Championship game, if nothing
right.
else at this rate. Of course, we're joined by Nate Bucati, co-host of the Border Patrol. Nate, I wanted to ask you, so obviously we've got the FIFA World Cup that's taking place in November, as we talked about a few weeks ago, obviously because of the weather. One of the reasons why they're going to have it there, but... Help me educate myself, not only myself, but the audience, because you say it's 4 to 6 games for a whole city. How many games is there involved in the World Cup, and how many countries are involved? You know, so just because, again, you know, I've watched soccer, obviously, because, you know, I cover Sporting Kansas City when I get a chance to go out there to the games. But knowing that the FIFA World Cup is on a whole nother massive scale, can you kind of put it where it goes? Can you kind of dumb it down for us on how many games and how long, you know, it takes for the World Cup to be started and completed?
Yeah, so the tournament, and I don't know the specific dates, but it's about a month. It's about a month. And the way that it's constructed now, there's 32 countries that get to represent in the World Cup finals. And so what they do is they divide it into 8 groups of 4. You play in your group. So you play when you come to the World Cup this November, the United States is going to be guaranteed 3 games because they'll play against the other 3 teams in their group. At the end of those games, the top 2 teams from each group, when it comes to their point total, and tiebreakers can come in, but the top 2 teams from each group advance to the knockout rounds. So you're down. So you cut half the teams out. Now you're down to 16, and you just play a single elimination tournament the rest of the way. Now, what's going to be interesting, and I think fantastic for us, is that in 2026, when the World Cup comes to the United States and Mexico and Canada, they're expanding the field to 48 teams. So they're adding 16 countries to the tournament. So now all of a sudden, you're going to be playing in however many groups of 4 that divides those, that 12 groups of 4 then?
Yeah.
And you're going to get your top two teams, and I think they're going to round it out. And so I'm not exactly sure even how many teams will qualify for the next round, because I haven't looked that far ahead. But I remember hearing the number that there's going to be a total of 80 games played in that World Cup. So you got 16 sites between USA, Mexico, and Canada, and you got 80 games. And so I think, you know, if you're Kansas City, you're looking at getting some of those group stage games and then maybe like a quarterfinal, something like that. So the show should be a lot of fun.
Man, we're looking at this. Now, I think I heard, and I don't know if it was from you or someone else, that, you know, when that time comes, I think there's going to be like a team or a country that's going to be, you know, practicing and set in Kansas City. I mean, so, again, not knowing this, and if you don't know the answer, that's fine as well, because I'm you know, we're trying to figure this out as it goes along. But, you know, whatever country's going to be staying in Kansas City or practicing in Kansas City, you know, do they stay for a certain length of time to practice and stuff? And then also, you know, these cities that are hosting it, most of them, if not all of them, have an MLS team there or an FC team there. Will Sporting Kansas City, you know, be involved in some way as a host city or a host team, and you know, making sure that, you know, things are going along according to this plan or whatever with the FIFA, or, you know, will they be working with them and the teams as they when they get here?
Yeah. So basically, what you're talking about, I'll give this example.
Okay.
The last time the United States played in the World Cup was in Brazil in 2014 on the men's side. That was the year the Matt Beisler was starting, and the U.S. had a pretty good run. They made it to the knockout round. They had to, once they qualified for the World Cup, just like every other country, they had to pick a city that was going to be their home base, where they were going to stay for their hotels, where they were going to train on the days between their games. Because remember, you don't play a game every day. You know, if you play three games, you might play a game and then have two or three days off, and then before you play your next game. And so the United States had to pick their destination well before they knew where they were going to play. And so they ended up picking Sao Paulo, which is the biggest city in Brazil, because they felt like it had the best hotels and the best facilities, and that was where they decided to pick their home base. And it ended up kind of being a bad thing for them, because what ended up happening, Sao Paulo was down in the southern part of Brazil, and all three of their games, all four of the games they ended up playing, were in the northern part of Brazil, up near the Amazon. So they had to fly 3 hours to their game, and then turn around after the game and fly 3 hours back home, because Brazil is a massive country like the United States. Imagine flying, you know, from L.A.
New York.
All the way to New York. And that's a 5-6 hour flight. And so teams that make it to the American World Cup are going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to decide, okay, where do we want to set up as our home base? And a lot of times they're going to have to do it, unless they've changed the timing of everything. They're probably going to have to do it before they know what cities they're even going to be playing in. So imagine the benefit of being located in Kansas City, especially with a brand new airport. You know, that now they'll be able to charter their flights anyway. They're not going to be flying commercial. Like if France decides to set up their World Cup headquarters in Kansas City, I'm pretty sure they're going to, you know, they're going to charter a jet. But imagine if they have to play a game in Vancouver, and then the next game they have to play in Miami, you know, and not knowing which places they're going to be. Kansas City's pretty much at max a 3 hour flight from anywhere. If you decide to set your home base up in New York City, and then you got to go play in Vancouver, you got to go play in LA, you got to go play down in Guadalajara, you're looking at a lot farther travel. So right there, I think being centrally located makes Kansas City a great place. And then the other thing is, the training complex where Sporting Kansas City trains, they built that thing to house not only Sporting Kansas City, but at the exact same time, the U.S. men's and women's national teams whenever they want. And they built it. I mean, if you ever tour the place, you can see that they've got it constructed the way they built that place to where Sporting Kansas City can have a full day of training and do all the stuff that they normally do, and the United States national team can be there the exact same day and do everything they want to do without ever either team ever really having to interact with one another. And they set it up that way because they wanted to make sure the United States wanted to come here and train. So who knows, maybe the U.S. will pick Kansas City as their home base.
Wow, that'd be great.
But it's possible that more than one team, more than one country will want to do that as well, because you got to remember they also have the training facilities at Swope Park, where Sporting Kansas City owns that facility, and it's very nice, and that's where Sporting KC2 plays. You got to remember that the KC Current are breaking ground, and they're just about to have the grand opening of their brand new training facility. That's the first ever, you know, of its kind for the women's professional game. Then they're going to have their new stadium built as well. You're going to have facilities all over this city, that because that's one of the big things you want, right? You want to be in a place where you have good facilities for your players to be able to train, to be able to rest and relax, all those things. So, yeah, I mean, I think that you're going to see definitely some countries that want to be in Kansas City as their home base, and they'll be there. I mean, they could be there for over a month if their team makes a deep run in the World Cup.
Yeah, you know, and this will be my last point, my last question relates to this when we switch over to the game today, but would the teams know in advance where they're going to play, you know, the their first round games? Because if that's the case, I mean, especially if you're Kansas City and you know, if the four countries know that they're going to be playing in Kansas City, how far in advance would they know so they could decide, okay, we may as well just, you know, instead of doing a travel where you're on a plane flying 3-4 hours or 2 hours or whatever, that those four countries or whatever would just be in Kansas City and then be able to, you know, like you said, practice at the facilities without ever having to come across each other, without having to worry about so much of that travel early on?
Yeah, and I don't fully know the answer to that yet, Darren. Okay. I will tell you that last World Cup, as I said, for the United States when they played in Brazil, they picked Sao Paulo before they knew where
gotcha.
They were going to
okay.
be playing. So now I don't know if that was a mistake on USA Soccer, but I remember at the time feeling like they were like, well, if we had known we were going to play these games up north, we would have picked a location yeah. up there, but we already knew where we were playing. So I'm not sure what it'll be like in 4 years from now, but that's what it was like for the U.S. Back in 2014 anyway.
All right, so later on today, 5 o'clock, you are, of course, in Nashville. That's where daughter goes to school out there in at Vanderbilt. Sporting Kansas City takes on Nashville SC. Give us a preview of today's game, man, and you know what fans can expect when they tune in to your broadcast later on this afternoon.
Well, one of the first things that you can expect is to see a fantastic atmosphere at the newest and nicest stadium maybe in Major League Soccer, which is called Geodis Park, which is a brand-new stadium that just opened up on May 1st in Nashville. And Nashville, they're getting great crowds. They're getting great response to their team and to the facility. And, you know, I talked about how Sporting Kansas City were the pioneers of this whole idea of building a really nice state-of-the-art soccer-specific stadium, because before Sporting did that with Children's Mercy Park back in 2010, most teams were, if they were building soccer-specific stadiums, they were doing it on the cheap, you know, because they just didn't feel like the money was there. And Sporting really changed that. And to their credit, the other teams in the league saw that and decided, you know what, we need to build bigger and better stadiums. Not bigger in terms of the fan base. Sporting Kansas City's stadium holds about 19,000 people. They can get maybe 21,000 with standing room only. Geodis Park holds 30,000. So it's the biggest soccer-specific stadium in the United States now. And they try to take a lot of the things that Sporting Kansas City did and improve upon them. So I'm really excited to see the atmosphere, because it's a place where they've really showed up and turned out. And I think it's just another example of the progress we're seeing of soccer in the United States. As for the game itself, one of the really interesting storylines here, so Nashville is an expansion team. Their first year, unfortunately for them, was the pandemic year. And they played at Titan Stadium, Nissan Stadium, where the Tennessee Titans played their first 2 years, and they opened up this stadium. But they made the playoffs their first year as an expansion team. They got the last seed in the Eastern Conference that year, but they made the playoffs, which is big for an expansion team. And then last year, they were the third-place team in the Eastern Conference. This year they got moved over to the Western Conference, where Sporting Kansas City are, because of the expansion of the league and Charlotte coming in. And they are in the playoffs right now. They're in sixth place, where Sporting Kansas City is in last place, dealing with a lot of injuries and just having a rough season so far. But Nashville's general manager is a guy named Mike Jacobs, who was the assistant GM in Kansas City for 3 years under Peter Vermees, and he is a longtime close friend of Peter's. And he, if you look at the staff for Nashville, from their head athletic trainer all the way down to their academy teams, it's loaded with guys that used to work at Sporting Kansas City. Because Mike Jacobs, and I talked to him on the phone this week, told me, I basically took everything that I saw from Kansas City and the fact that they make the playoffs every year, they're a contender every year, the competitive spirit and mindset that they have, and that's who I wanted to fill up our brand-new organization with. And he's done that, and they've been successful right off the bat. And I think it's pretty cool to see that there's so many connections between the SKC side and the Nashville side here. For Sporting Kansas City, they're dealing with a lot of adversity this year. They've got a lot of guys hurt. They've got a lot of guys that are trying to work their way back to fitness right now. And they're going to be the underdogs in this game today because Nashville are in a different position. They're on the come up right now. They've got some really good players. They're mostly healthy. They've got a big run of home games coming up because they started the season with 8 straight games away from home because the stadium was getting finished, which means that they get to finish off the season with a whole bunch of home games. So they really like the position that they're in. So Sporting are desperate for points right now. If they want to get back in the playoffs at all, they've got to start racking up results. So they've got their work cut out for them today, but they're going to be up for a fight because they're desperate. And that's always – a desperate team is always a dangerous team. So I think it's going to be a good game this afternoon.
There is nobody else I would ever want to talk soccer with other than this guy, Nate Bucati. Make sure you tune in Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. with the Border Patrol, Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati. Nate, thank you so very much, man. Good luck on the call today. And I always appreciate your time, and happy Father's Day to you again.
Hey, Darren and Blake, it's great talking to you guys. Happy Father's Day, happy Juneteenth, and go Sporting Kansas City for you back at home.
All right, make sure you all tune in later on this evening, listen to the broadcast, and hear Nate call a victory for Sporting Kansas City. We'll be back after this timeout. You're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to The Ship with Darren Smith here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, 810WHB.com, and of course the Sports Radio 810 mobile app. I want to thank Nate Bucati for joining us in the first segment of the show. For the rest of the show, I have a very special guest. You all hear him on the radio with me each and every week. He is live in studio. Surprising you, boy. Of course, he does owe me a slab of ribs, so we definitely going to go by gates when it's all said and done. But Michael Coleman, happy Father's Day to you. Happy Juneteenth to you, man.
Thank you, appreciate
it. Welcome back to your home in Kansas City.
It's been a good visit, but I tell you why it's a good sign. You played the songs I wouldn't play at my funeral. I ain't dying anytime soon, but Cool and the Gang's Hollywood Swinging, that's my selection. So I want y'all to just jam when you hear it. Thanks. And Coleman's funeral song.
Consider that. And also joining us, he is a Chiefs ambassador, he is a 1995 Chiefs MVP. He is a 2-time Super Bowl champion, Mr. Mark Collins. Mark Collins, happy Father's Day and happy Juneteenth to you as well.
Thank you, my brothers. How are you guys doing?
MC.
I got 2 MCs. Hey, you all get 2 MCs for the price of 1 this morning, man.
We are MC squared.
Yes, we are. But we ain't squared.
Hey, look, so let's veer off for a split second. MC, we'll start with you, man. What's Father's Day mean to you? I know, in your house and your family, what's Father's Day mean for you today?
The best thing that ever happened in my life is to be a father and to be in my kid's life is a blessing. It really is. And I don't just celebrate Father's Day just for today. To me, every day is Father's Day.
Right.
Just because I just enjoy being around my kids, and my kids enjoy being around me. As a matter of fact, as I sit on my patio smoking a cigar and drinking coffee, my boys were out there hanging with me. We're just talking, just chopping it up, which we always do, and it's fantastic. And there's no better feeling. There's no better feeling.
I did not grow up with my father. So my relationship with my son is very, very significant, very important to me. He's a grown young man. He always tells me how good he looks. I'm like, well, where did you think he get it from, man? Come on, Mama.
Come on.
But it's been cool to see him grow into a young man. And I've been blessed, like many other, I know Mark's been blessed this way too, to having kids that were focused and not involved in any crazy silliness stuff. Mm-hmm. That's really off the chart. I mean, it's tough being a parent today.
And Mark, let me ask you, because obviously, you know, you excel at the highest level in the NFL, won a couple of championships with the Giants and played well while you were here in Kansas City along with Green Bay as well. You know, you've got sons that, you know, that play football. Now, a lot of times parents, there are those parents who like their kids falling in the footsteps. Others, kind of like Michael Jordan and others, you know, they kind of, you know, they don't mind, but they kind of don't push them in that direction because they know the pressure that will come under them. What kind of joy do you get knowing that you have a son, especially one I think that's graduated or is in his last year at college that's looking to play your position that you excelled at in the NFL, but gives you a chance to like do one-on-one stuff, you know, share that knowledge of the game and what he needs to do to become a better player. I mean, what does that mean for you when you got a son that can follow sons that follow in your footsteps that you can bestow some of your expertise and knowledge on?
Well, like my son Mark Jr., he didn't get drafted. He's still looking for a team, but if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. He doesn't have to follow my footsteps. He has to create his own path.
Right.
And that's the one thing I've always told my sons who are both playing football. Marco's at Coffeyville going in second year, is, you know, do what you do. Do what you want to do. And while you're playing football especially, I'm going to help you to get to where you want to be. And sometimes that's all you can do. As I'm talking to Mark, you know, and there are some things that are out of our control. For instance, him not getting drafted. That's out of your control. But always be prepared just in case an opportunity comes, maybe an undrafted free agent or something like that. Always be prepared. But not getting drafted is not an in for all. You know, he's already got an internship doing some stuff here in Kansas City on the technical level. So he's all right, you know. But to be around my boys, and we're talking about my boys right now, it's the best feeling. I can sit out, smoke a cigar. We talk about everything. We talk about taking a cruise sometime next year. We do stuff like that. It's a great feeling. So I hope he gets a chance, an opportunity. but if he doesn't, he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Well, I might have to join you on that cruise because Lord knows I know the pretty ladies that's going to be out there on the cruise. At least it'd be nice eye candy.
Hey, hold on a minute. Let me interject here. You know, so, okay, the one you just talked about, the son you just talked about, was that the one at Coffeyville when they came to East Texas to play in that bowl game?
Yeah.
I got a chance to see his son play. I guess my alma mater. Or he is at my alma mater. It was a good game. It was a game where you didn't know what was going on because – I think there was COVID, and COVID was involved in terms of how many games you played and you missed and all of that. And those two teams got a chance to play. And so got a chance to see him compete. He's a competitor like his father, you know. And so commend you for that, man.
Mark, one reason why, you know, I want to have you on, we talked a little bit yesterday, is you being a former player rep, obviously the big news this offseason is what is the NFL going to do as it relates to Deshaun Watson? Now, there were reports this week that the NFL is looking for a quote-unquote substantive, you know, suspension of Deshaun Watson. Now, if it's a year, I'm not sure that's really a substantial because that's what they gave Calvin Ridley for $1,500 worth of gambling, so to speak. So I don't know if they're looking to try to do 2 years or something, but how this plays out, this is one of the things that I agree with Stephen A on. What are you still investigating? Because, you know, on the criminal side of it, that's pretty much done because there were two Texas counties that did not indict Deshaun Watson and was taking place is going to be done civilly. So what is it that the NFL is supposedly finding out that law enforcement couldn't do, obviously in your opinion? But also, I mean, with that being the case, If nothing is going to be done on the criminal side and nothing is taking place on the civil side, exactly, and you've taken the commissioner exemplist off the table, what exactly are you doing to, you know, or what are you investigating, and how do you think that they're going to gather a quote unquote suspension? Because the only thing I can think of is personal conduct, you know, as it relates to you know, I guess the embarrassment of the Shield or something like that. But other than that, I can't really see what leg they would have to stand on in suspending them. And then, of course, the Players Association has reported that, hey, if you try to go in some exorbitant amount of games or whatever, we're obviously going to appeal, but we're coming after the owners in relation to, you know, in relation to whatever excuses that you use or whatever logic that you try to use for the players that you didn't use for the owners.
Yeah, and I don't know what else they can look at. But one thing I do know, the league, let me back up. Being a former player rep, and I'm thinking, DeMarcus is thinking this way. The Cleveland Browns and the NFL, we already spoke, to be honest with you. The owners of the Browns, general manager and owners, they spoke to the league, and they knew what was going on. That's why they signed Deshaun Watson. They knew that this man, the worst thing could happen is maybe conduct detrimental. They'll find him for, you know, 4, 5, or 6 games. They're not looking for anything else. That's it. So Cleveland's going, hey, we're going to sign this guy. What else? What's on the pipe? Well, he may get suspended for 4, 5, 6 games. Okay, can we sign him? And the league getting the blessing. Yes, you can sign him. Because Cleveland already knows nothing else is going to come of it. There's nothing else to investigate. So they signed him. Now, to apply what happened with owners, I mean, whether it's Jerry Jones or whatever happened with John Gruden, and now you're talking about
Patriots owner, you know, especially with him being caught up in that.
Yeah, rub and tug. all this stuff, you know, things got to be done equally. They should be, but we know it doesn't happen that way. So long story short, I do think Deshaun Watson will play, and he'll get a suspension, and that's basically it. You know, that's what I see. But we just gonna see how it plays out.
See, and I don't know. I guess for me. And Mike knows kind of where I said it. A lot of people, you know, first they were just presuming 8 games, and then, you know, after what Major League Baseball did with Trevor Bauer, the, you know, 2 years, and, you know, now he obviously didn't play at all last year. That was more so the Houston Texans' choice. You know, they paid him essentially $10 million not to play last year.
Mm-hmm.
Look, man, everybody says that where there's smoke, there's fire. 24, 26 women can't be lying. But I've also seen and been in a situation where you've been accused of something to where you had to clear your name and stuff was false. But people make accusations because they can. I'm always and I know how the system is as it relates to black men. I also know how the court of public opinion can be as well. You know, I have not seen the same type of vigor as it relates to punishment when it came to Jerry Jones and the voyeurism, obviously, Daniel Snyder, especially when it comes to the Washington football team and the stuff, the reports that have came out, that haven't came out, that is done orally, that should come out, that Congress may have come out. And then, of course, Robert Kraft, they spent boatloads of money to make sure that the tapes and stuff was erased, that he didn't get in trouble, because that took place the day of the AFC Championship game in Kansas City in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and look, I've called out people on the media to where there's Mina Kimes and others to where, you know, you all are utilizing your platform to kind of demonize Deshaun. And look, whatever he did, at least as it relates to the court of law on the criminal side, they felt that there wasn't enough evidence there to indict him.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecuting attorney said on the podcast just over the weekend that doesn't mean that he was necessarily guilty or anything, but it wasn't enough evidence that they could, you know, pursue to where if they were to do so, they would find him guilty of any particular crimes. The problem that I have is that people are trying to pass judgment or trying to be the judge and jury as it relates to social media and utilizing their platform. Now, I'm not, because, you know, me and my sister kind of, you know, kind of, I don't want to say fall out, but, you know, we come into a disagreement because, again, I can't see how the NFL can, quote unquote, suspend for any amount of games, for real, based off of one, stuff hasn't gone to court, you know, and won't go to court until after the Super Bowl next year. But also, look, I get it to where you don't want to, if you suspend them and you suspend it for X amount of games, then it looks like you're too weak. If you spend it for too many games, it looks like it's excessive. There was a Cleveland Browns commentator on a show just this week that talked about, you know, he doesn't use the R word too often, but, you know, if you try to excessively go after Deshaun Watson based on allegations after what we've seen with these owners, then it starts to look like, you know, I mean, these owners and their money, and obviously, you know, they're white versus Deshaun Watson, you know, and what he's been accused of, especially when he's not going to be facing any criminal charges. It's hard for me to rock and side with the NFL on this.
Well,
I agree. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, said they're in a quandary because of the bad boy owners, and I think that's part of the timeout too. Because how do you justify punishing Deshaun Watson, who went through two processes of juries, and going by hearsay, he's steadfast to his story. He hasn't changed it. And one thing I've always maintained, until we hear that somebody's been held against their will in that hotel room, it's not going to be a criminal issue. And all out of all them women, not one of them have said that. And that's a different kind of funky kind of leverage for Deshaun Watson, because you juxtapose it to how many women there were. But yet, not one of them have complained about that. And so, and I think the situation with Kraft and Jerry Jones, nothing's going to happen to those guys. I mean, what would you do to them? What would you do to them? Go ahead, MC.
No, you could do. I mean, here's, as I said before, in the beginning of this conversation, Cleveland signed him knowing what's happening. Okay, now, who are all these people, their platforms, they're trying to drag him through the mud through social media and in the court of public opinion, which, you know, that's the life of, that's how we live now.
Right.
But Cleveland knows what's going to happen, because if they didn't know, they wouldn't have signed him. And before Cleveland signed him, six other teams were inquiring about him. So they know what's going to happen.
Right.
Deshaun Watson, he will play.
Yeah.
Extension, whatever. Yeah. And the only thing they have is kind of detrimental, because, you know, to accuse him and get him kicked off a team in the court of public opinion is wrong. Because as Michael just said, hey, there's no woman that stepped up and said, you know, he held me here by against my will. One thing I would say about that is Deshaun Watson has a problem.
Yes.
And his problem is
yes.
with masseuses, which is no
and
different
bad judgment.
Than Robert Kraft. Yeah, than Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So, look, I guess I would ask you is, there is, I don't want to say it's a report, but there is, could the league and the Players Association negotiate a suspension to where it would, you know, to where it would not, you know, to where, again, it would keep the Players Association from, like, going after the owners, so to speak? I mean, would do you see a scenario where that could take place, to where, you know, all sides come to some sort of agreement on a number of games and suspension? So, because obviously, if the former U.S. District Judge, I think, that is going to handle the case, if she comes back and says that no suspension should take place at all, then it's over with. He'll play all 17 games. If she requests, or if she suggests X amount of games and is too excessive for the Players Association, or too lenient, or too excessive or too lenient for the Players Association, either side has a right to appeal, but then Roger Goodell gets the final decision, which kind of,
right.
again, kind of,
right.
you know, it's kind of crazy. But if let's say, for example, the judge says we'll go with four games, Players Association, cool. Well, the NFL might say, well, no, we want a year or 2 years or whatever. Well, now you appeal it, goes there, Goodell has the final say. Now, what I would see happening, what I would eventually see happening is, of course, you would see the Player Association take it the legal route, go to court, discovery, and then you see what happens with the owners and stuff like that. And then it, you know, then it might come down. So I'm just curious how you think it might play before we, you know, end this segment.
I tend to think the Players Union, the players will go, well, what's the criteria of kind of detrimental? What is it? That's the whole case. So, what is it that the league? What's the penalty for the league for their kind of detrimental? What is it? If it's four games, six games, that's it. So the negotiation part, there's no negotiation. There's none. What's the mandate of it? Of kind of detrimental? What did you give another player who was in this situation? What did you do with a coach who's in this situation? That's the point where I would come from as a player rep.
Yeah, because Ben Roethlisberger was accused of rape by a couple of women and got six games, and it got appealed down to four. So got a couple of minutes left.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so very much for your time. Enjoy Father. And I don't. Are you going to join us over at Gates after the show or what? Because I know Mike invited.
Which one are you guys going to? The one.
Probably one closer to you. Probably one out here off of a state line. Not 103rd.
Give me a call after the show.
Okay, well. All right, MC, we're going to do that.
All right, stay by your phone. We'll talk to you in an hour.
All right, buddy.
We'll be back on the ship. You're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.